Eddie, the 10-year reunion. Chapter 1. New projects, part 2. When Kathy returns, Eddie has the pool area all ready for the party. Seeing the table where she spent a lot of time doing her homework while in college, Kathy takes a seat and reminisces, "I remember sitting at this table with Paula when I was at the university. We would be out here for 3 hours and get maybe an hour of work done." Eddie replies, "That was almost 10 years ago." Kathy replies, "Yeah. And this is still one of my favorite places in our whole yard." By late morning, nearly everyone has arrived. No one in this group wants to miss the pizza, which is still everyone's favorite dish. Waiting for the pizza to be delivered, everyone relaxes by the pool, except for, perhaps, Tessa. Tessa, maintaining her competitive edge, is swimming a few laps, just in case Eddie has been doing the same. Sitting on the stone wall talking, Bobby B. asks Matt Wood, "So, how do you like the NFL? Wood replies, "You know, it's a job. My job is to sack the quarterback. I like my job, especially when the other team puts a rookie quarterback in. Then, I show them what football is like in the NFL. Bobby B. laughs and replies, "Really?" Wood replies, "Yeah. One rookie thought he was hot shit because his college team won some national championship. I think we sacked him a dozen times during that game." Bobby B. laughs, telling Wood, "I guess he learned his lesson." Shifting to Bobby B.'s accomplishments, Wood mentions, "I heard you broke the world record in the shot put. That must have felt good." Bobby B. replies, "Yeah. But I don't hold the record anymore. Two guys beat me since. But I'm still working out, and I can bench press more than I could back then. I want my record back. And I'm going to get it." Wood asks, "How much can you bench these days?" Bobby B. confidently boasts, "More than you." Quick to reply, Wood contends, "No, you can't." Bobby B. smiles and confidently replies, "Oh yes, I can." Sitting at a table, overhearing the conversation, Erica tells Bobby B. and Wood, "There's a gym downstairs. Talk is never going to settle this, and you guys know it." Bobby B. looks at Wood, who both smile and stand up and head to Eddie and Kathy's home gym. Erica yells out, "Bench press competition in the gym. Bradshaw versus Wood. Don't miss it." A few of the guys head inside with Bobby B. and Wood, wondering who is going to win. Erica, however, suspects she knows exactly who is going to win. As the two contenders warm up, Johnson whispers to Eddie, "Do you think Wood will beat him?" Eddie replies, "No." Bobby B. arrives at work 2 hours early a few times a week and works out in my gym behind the service station. Mark comments, "I've seen him there a lot when I come there to work out." Mark, who has a small home gym, also often works out in the much larger and better equipped gym behind Eddie's service station. With 4,000 square feet, Eddie's well-equipped private gym still gets a lot of use. Ready to begin the competition, Wood asks Bobby B., "How much are we starting with?" Bobby B. replies, "How about 600 pounds? Wood replies, "Be real." Bobby B. backs down and suggests, "How about 315 pounds, then?" Wood replies, "Sure. I'll go first and show you how it's done." Bobby B. smiles and replies, "Be my guest." Wood gets onto the bench, knowing that this lift will be easy. Lowering the bar to his chest, Wood lifts the 315-pound bar quite effortlessly, as most any NFL defensive lineman should be able to do. But after all, Wood is an NFL defensive lineman. Next up, Bobby B. gets onto the bench, lowers the bar to his chest, and just as easily as Wood, raises the bar, completing the lift. Braden comments, "That's looking way too easy. When are you guys gonna put some weight on that bar? My grandmother can bench press that." Braden's comment fires up Bobby B., but throws Wood a bit off base. Wood insists, let's put 405 on the bar and get this over with. Bobby B replies, what are you talking about? We're still warming up. Eddie and Mark, who both know Bobby B, can easily complete the upcoming lift, load the bar with 405 pounds. Wood gets onto the bench, thinking that the competition will not last too much longer. Lowering the bar to his chest and after a slight pause, Wood raises the bar and completes the lift. Bobby B tells Wood, it looks like you were struggling. Wood replies, nah. I dozed off and took a nap halfway through the lift. Bobby B confidently gets onto the bench, lowers the bar to his chest and raises the bar, completing the lift. Seeing that Bobby B was just as easily able to complete his lift, Wood gets slightly concerned. Braden, who was warming up on the incline bench, sneaks into rotation and gets onto the bench. Dropping the bar to his chest, Braden, who is all fired up, lowers the bar and lifts it just as easily as Bobby B. Braden stands up and exclaims, when's this contest gonna get started? Hunter can even lift that weight. Eddie asks Bobby B and Wood, how much do you guys want? Bobby B suggests, how about 495 pounds? Looking worried, Wood replies, sure. Let's go for it. As the bar is loaded with 90 more pounds, Wood paces back and forth, getting himself psyched up. Wood gets onto the bench, grabs the bar, and lowers it to his chest. Using every last ounce of energy he can find, Wood raises the bar, straining as he makes the lift. Completing the lift, Wood gets off the bench, hammers his chest, and exclaims, it looks like I won. It's all me. Bobby B tells Wood, I think I'll pass on this round. Eddie laughs and whispers to Mark, here it comes. He's going for broke. Eddie asks, how much, bro? Bobby B quickly answers, give me 600 pounds. And I'll go first. Wood looks like he needs a rest. Wood looks at Bobby B like he's crazy. Nevertheless, 600 pounds is loaded onto the bar. Bobby B now paces back and forth, getting himself psyched up. Energetically getting onto the bench, Bobby B points at Wood and chants, you gotta pump the muscle, pumping up the iron. Pump up the muscle, pumping up the iron. Bobby B gets into position, ready to show Wood how it's done. Eddie and Mark are the spotters as Bobby B lowers the bar to his chest. Letting out a primal scream as he raises the bar, Bobby B seriously does not want to lose this competition. Bobby B successfully completes the lift, sits up, and exclaims, yes. Everyone in the gym cheers, including Wood, who cannot believe what he just saw. Wood gets on the bench, wondering how and when Bobby B got so strong. Wood has a bit of a struggle raising the bar off the uprights. As Wood lowers the bar to his chest, the bar drops a little faster than he expected. Putting forth his best effort, Wood gives it all that he has. Lifting the bar an inch or so, Wood, even with a primal scream, does not have the strength to complete the lift. Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Bobby B help Wood raise the bar. Wood concedes, shaking Bobby B's hand, telling him, that was good. Really good. Congratulations. Bobby B takes a bow and replies, thank you. Thank you. On the way upstairs, Wood asks Bobby B, have you ever thought about playing football? Bobby B replies, we talked about it a few times when I threw for the university. But I'm not playing football. Mark comments, yeah. We talked about that a lot, mostly just for fun. Walking into the kitchen, they get word that the pizza is being delivered. Making the announcement is Eddie Jr., who is running around telling everyone the pizza has arrived. Now that the pizza is all laying out on the counter, everyone digs in. Over lunch, Braden asks Eddie, is that new grassy area over there for throwing the shot put? Eddie replies, no. It's a bocce ball court. Braden asks, what's bocce ball? Eddie replies, "It's a game you play with two teams. It's hard to explain, but easy to play. We'll play later." Brayden also mentions to Eddie, "And you took down your jasmine wall." Eddie replies, "Yeah. I did that 2 weeks ago. The jasmine was growing wild. So, we put azaleas along the pool fence instead." Brayden tells Eddie, "I know it took years, but I finally got my yard done the way I want it. Wendy really likes plants. So, I made her engraved mirrored plant identification markers for all her plants. They really look cool." Eddie asks, "You made engraved mirrors for plant identification markers? I've never heard of that before." Brayden replies, "I wanted to get something unique for her." Eddie asks, "How many markers do you have?" Brayden replies, "About 35 in the front yard and 25 in the backyard." Eddie tells Brayden, "Your yard is looking really good, bro. You put a lot of work into it. It really shows." Brayden replies, "Thank you." Brayden asks Eddie, "Do you got any ideas how I can get rid of the Chucky? He's becoming a real pain in the ass." Brayden's son, Hunter, asks, "Do you mean the boogeyman?" Brayden tells his son, "Yeah. We're talking about the boogeyman." Hunter takes his slice of pizza and tells his father, "I'm going to go eat with mommy. I don't want no boogeyman talk." Brayden tells his son, "Don't drop your pizza." Hunter walks over to the table where Wendy is seated and joins his mother. Mark walks over and takes the seat vacated by Hunter. Brayden tells Eddie, "Back to what I was saying. Do you got any ideas how I can get rid of the Chucky? Someone shot at my garage window with a BB gun. I gotta get his ass out of there." Eddie jokingly suggests, "You can always burn his house down." Brayden replies, "I can't do that. I'll go to jail." Mark suggests, "Why don't you mess with him? Call the power company and have his electricity disconnected." Brayden laughs and replies, "That's a good idea. I might just do that." Mark also suggests, "Cut his phone wire. Just mess with him until he sells his house." Eddie reassures Brayden, "We'll figure it out, bro. We'll get rid of him somehow." Brayden comments, "I just wish the county officers would bust his ass for something." Over at another table, Hunter sits on Wendy's lap as he eats his slice of pizza. Wendy tells Hunter, "Slow down. You're eating way too fast." Hunter boldly informs his mother, "I wanna go in the pool." Hearing Hunter's idea, Eddie Jr., Mark Jr., and Dawn all start eating faster. Kathy informs the kids, "You guys can't go in the pool until we check the whole pool and the skimmers for frogs." Eddie Jr. tells Hunter, "Yeah. We can't go in the water until we check for frogs." Hunter asks, "No boogeyman?" Eddie Jr. replies, "No boogeymen live here. The boogeyman lives on your street." That was the last thing Hunter wanted to hear. But the legend of Chucky lives on. To the next generation, Chucky is known as the boogeyman. All the kids now know that Chucky is the boogeyman and know exactly where he lives. After lunch, Kathy and Eddie Jr. check the skimmers and pool for any signs of frogs, both dead or alive. Kathy checked the pool earlier, but with children, you can't be too careful with things like frogs in the pool or the boogeyman hiding out in a skimmer. Seeing no sign of a frog anywhere, Eddie Jr. yells out, "No frogs," and jumps into the pool. Lynn Burson asks Kathy, "Don't you have to wait 30 minutes after eating before you go in a pool?" Kathy replies, "No. That's an old wives' tale. Someone probably made that up to make their kids wait so they can clean up after lunch or dinner and drink their coffee." Eddie Jr. is followed by Mark Jr., Dawn, and Hunter, who sit on the sun shelf and play for now. Erica walks by the table where Brayden is seated, telling Brayden, "You know, my dad still wants you on the county police force." Brayden replies, "Yeah, I know. But I ain't going nowhere. I'm gonna stay right there at the university, where I can use the gym and watch all the track meets. Erica informs Braden, my dad put in a gym at the new precinct. You can use that one whenever you want. Braden replies, I'm really enjoying my job over there at the university. I'm not going anywhere. Erica has been trying to get Braden on the county police force for years. Confident that Braden will join the county police force someday, Erica tells Braden, when you change your mind, let me know. Braden, however, is perfectly happy working at the university and will not likely be telling Erica that he will be making a move anytime soon. Louis Zeno, who is the architect of the new track at the high school, takes a seat next to Angela Meadows and asks, how is my video coming along? Angela replies, it's going to be good. I really think it will be a great marketing piece for your future work. With a lot riding on the video, Zeno replies, that's what I was hoping for. I can't wait to see it. Angela is producing a time-lapse video of the new track as it is being installed at the high school. Zeno is hoping that, for future clients, the video will save him a lot of explaining of how a running track is installed. Mark, sitting at another table, turns around and comments, and knowing that they are on camera, the workers work harder. No one is slacking off. The camera, mounted on top of the storage building, has been documenting the progress since the work began. After lunch, the adults join the kids in the pool. Over at the deep end, Bobby B and Matt Wood are having their own private cannonball contest. With no judges to gauge their splash, they decide between themselves who is winning. At the shallow end, Eddie Jr. is showing off his flip turn to Tessa. Eddie Jr.'s flip turn is a little rough, but, after all, he is not quite 4 years old. Over at the bocce ball court, it's Eddie and Mark versus Braden and Johnson. Braden has discovered that he likes playing bocce ball and is now considering installing a court in his backyard. Over at the tables, Kathy asks Barbara, how come you didn't bring George? Barbara replies, he's only 6 months old. He'd bake out here in the hot Sunday. Paula suggests, you could just squirt him with the hose and cool him off. Barbara replies, I'm not going to do that. What's gotten into you, girl? Kathy replies, she has heat stroke again. Or maybe she's pregnant. Paula tells Kathy, I don't have heat stroke, and I'm not pregnant either. Kathy smiles and replies, who knows? It could be both. Not giving Paula a chance to reply, Kathy jumps into the water. Paula and Barbara follow, both suddenly wondering why they are sitting in the heat rather than cooling off in the pool. Finished with their bocce ball game, Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson all jump into the water. With nearly everyone now in the pool, Eddie's brother, John, stands at the pool's edge and yells out, I have an announcement to make. Paula whispers to Kathy and Barbara, I wonder if Anne is pregnant. Kathy replies, I hadn't heard anything about that. Making his announcement, John yells out, we're laying the sod for the new track on Saturday, July 20th. I'm going to need a whole lot of help. Anyone who wants to help, come on by. There'll be pizza for lunch, and I'm buying. So, mark it on your calendar. Kathy whispers to Paula, I should have known. He's always trying to find someone to do his work for him. Paula asks Kathy, are you going to help? Kathy replies, sure. Why not? After all, you guys, Bobby B, and us are paying the bill. Barbara comments, at the very least, we'll get a workout and pizza out of it. Kathy laughs and replies, yeah. If John is paying for the pizza, we can sit there all afternoon and eat pizza. Paula tells Kathy, he's still getting off really cheap. Kathy points out, we're the ones getting off cheap, girl. We're not paying for the labor. Paula exclaims, that's right. I'm definitely going to be there. Early evening, the party winds down, and many of the guests head out. Now, the second party begins. Hanging around for the second party is Eddie, Kathy, Mark, Paula, Braden, Wendy, Mitchell, Amber, Bobby B., Erica, Johnson, and Barbara. The six guys are the original tribe, as named by Anthony Ambrosini when they were freshmen in high school. Eddie Jr., Mark Jr., Dawn, and Hunter, all worn out from the busy day of fun, all fall asleep inside on the floor. Now that the original tribe and their wives are alone, Eddie brings out two rocks that look like geodes, which he and Kathy found at the rocky outcropping where the blue, yellow, and red stones were originally found. Kathy is hoping that there are more blue, yellow, and red stones inside. This way, each member of the tribe will have their own collection of stones. A few years ago, Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula went back to the time when they were in high school. The group told their younger counterparts to explain to the other members of the tribe about the portal, that is, only if they believed that time travel was possible. Unfortunately, Eddie's brother John, Hoffa, and a few others did not believe. By telling Braden, Wendy, Bobby B., Erica, Johnson, Barbara, Mitchell, and Amber about the portal, the future was radically changed. With the original tribe all now knowing about the portal, the group is closer than ever. Upon learning about the portal, over the years, Braden has mostly used the portal to go forward in time to buy radio equipment and weapons that are not available at his time. Mitchell and Amber have used the portal to find interesting places to train. Johnson has occasionally done the unthinkable and gone into the future to discover the outcome of a few track meets. Johnson used this information to make adjustments to events, thereby winning the meet. Bobby B. and Amber have taken many trips with Paula to the bank, which is Paula's term for buying gold in the present and selling it in the future for a profit. As he passes the rocks around, Eddie asks, "Does anyone have any ideas of how to open the rocks?" Erica jokingly suggests, "Bobby can throw it like a shot put. If it lands on the concrete, it might break open." Bobby B. replies, "It might break the concrete instead." Mark suggests, "We could use an angle grinder with a masonry cutting wheel." Eddie replies, "That should work." Bobby B. also replies, "Yeah. That sounds like it would work to me." Mark tells Eddie, "I have one in my truck, but it's at home." Eddie replies, "I have one, bro. I use it for cutting metal. And I have a masonry cutting wheel." Johnson shakes one of the rocks, which seems to be filled with many smaller rocks. Johnson mentions, "There seems to be a lot more rocks inside of it." Kathy explains, "We were hoping that there are blue, yellow, and red stones inside." Barbara asks Kathy, "So, you found these two rocks over at the rocky outcropping?" Kathy explains, "Yeah. We dug that place up from one end to another. I think we found every last stone." Mark also mentions, "And we dug up the area by the original portal on the path to the beach. All we found there was one blue stone and one red stone." Barbara suggests, "That would lead me to believe someone else knew about the portal at one time." Kathy exclaims, "That's right. I hope we didn't break someone's portal." Paula points out, "Both stones were scattered all over the place, and were nowhere near where we found the yellow stone a long time ago. It was probably a very long time ago." Erica asks, "Why are we talking? Let's cut those babies open." Mark stands up, announcing, "I'm ready." Over at Eddie's detached garage, he gets his angle grinder and attaches a masonry cutting wheel. Eddie asks, "Who wants to do the honors?" Mark volunteers, saying, "I will." Outside, Mark gets to work, carefully cutting the rock open. Everyone stands back, staying out of the path of the rock dust. Wendy asks, "How does that cut right through rock that easily?" Eddie replies, "The cutting wheel is turning at 12,000 RPM. And it's harder than the stone." Overhearing Eddie's comment, Mark informs Eddie, "Just barely. I'm going to need another cutting wheel. This rock is as hard as stone." Erica comments, "That's because it is a stone." Everyone laughs, knowing that Erica's comment is quite accurate. Wendy comments, "Mark walked right into that one." After a monumental effort, Mark finishes cutting the round rock in half and brings it over to the group. Still holding the rock together, Mark hands the rock to Paula. Mark then steps aside to hose the dust off himself. At the stony wall next to Eddie's garage, Paula carefully separates the two halves of the rock, and out pours a generous quantity of blue, yellow, and red stones. Everyone cheers, knowing that each of them can now have their very own stones. While everyone looks at the stones, Paula examines the inside of the rock, which seems to resemble a geode, but is rounded inside. Paula quickly concludes the geode, itself, is made of a really hard material since Mark had a very hard time opening it. After seeing what is inside the first rock, Paula yells out to Mark, "Hey, Mark, open up the second rock." Mark takes the angle grinder to the second rock, as everyone else looks over the beautiful stones. Eddie walks over to Mark, announcing, "The second shift is here. Do you want me to take over?" Mark replies, "I'm sorry about your cutting wheel, bro. This stuff is as hard as stone. The cutting wheel got all eaten up. But, yeah, you can give it a try." Eddie looks at the cutting wheel and tells Mark, "Let me get another cutting wheel." Eddie changes the cutting wheel on the angle grinder and gets to work, finding that the stone is much harder than he originally thought. Eddie finishes the work and hands the cut stone to Mark. Mark brings the stone over to the wall, where he slowly separates the two halves. Inside, there is another generous supply of blue, yellow, and red stones. Wendy energetically exclaims, "There's enough stones for everyone." Seeing what was inside the stone, Mark replies, "Yeah, I'd say." Paula tells Mark, "Look at what we found." Mark exclaims, "Wow. A clear stone. I wonder what it does." Erica suggests, "Maybe it takes you to a clear universe." Paula comments, "I'm sure we'll find out soon enough." Eddie hoses the rock dust off of himself and tells everyone, "I'm jumping in the pool for a minute to get the rest of this dust off of me." Mark replies, "I'm joining you." While Eddie and Mark are in the pool cleaning off, the rest of the group brings the stones inside. With all the stones laid out on the table, Kathy mentions, "It's kind of odd that there are the same number of stones of each color in each geode. And they are all perfectly cut." Paula comments, "What's really odd is there are 12 stones of each color in each geode, and there are 12 of us." Mitchell tells the group, "This is really weird. Two identical geodes with the identical contents can't possibly happen in nature. It totally defies probability." Bobby B. asks, "I wonder how perfectly cut stones got inside of a rock that's harder than steel." Erica replies, "Aliens put them inside." Paula exclaims, "There are no such things as aliens." Kathy informs Paula, "If there's a boogeyman, then there are aliens." Paula, who was very afraid of the boogeyman when she was a child, exclaims, "Stop it, girl. There is no boogeyman." Kathy, knowing exactly how Paula would respond, just smiles. Quickly changing the subject, Paula asks Kathy, "How many stones have we found before today?" Kathy replies, "In total, we've found 12 yellow stones, 10 blue ones, and 11 red ones." Paula surmises, "I'm guessing there was another one of these geode kind of things that had our other stones in them. It must have broken open." Mitchell replies, "If each geode had 12 stones of each color, there are 2 blue stones and 1 red stone still out there somewhere." Kathy curiously mentions, "I still want to know how exactly 3 stones, 1 of each color, made its way to the 3 boulders on the way to the beach." Paula suggests, "Someone else knew about the portal." Contemplating all of what Paula mentioned, Erica suggests, "The third geode must have broken open when it fell out of the spaceship that dumped them here." Paula tells Erica, "Stop it, girl. There is no spaceship, and there are no aliens. Erica asks Paula, what's more believable? A spaceship or parallel universes? Kathy can't help to comment, the spaceship must have dumped the boogeyman here too. Paula quickly replies, not. Kathy reminds Paula again, millions of kids have seen the boogeyman. All those kids can't possibly be wrong. Knowing that she'll lose the boogeyman argument like she did 1,000 times in the past, Paula does not dare to respond. Kathy mentions to the group, there's still that 1 pound blue stone that I found. We've never found a matching red or yellow stone that was that big. And the big blue stone doesn't make the portal work. Erica postulates, that's because the big blue stone powered the spaceship that brought the other stones here. Paula again tells Erica, stop it, girl. There is no spaceship. Kathy tells Erica, Paula's probably right. It wasn't a spaceship. The boogeyman dropped all the stones here. Erica calmly replies, that makes a lot of sense. It had to have been the boogeyman. Paula ignores Kathy and Erica, not wanting to get into a discussion about the boogeyman. Paula is saved by the bell. All cleaned up, Eddie and Mark walk up, and Eddie asks, what do we got? Kathy replies, blue, yellow, red, and clear stones, 24 of each. Eddie and Mark take a look, paying particular attention to the clear stones that they've not seen before. The group divides the stones among themselves, each now having a total of 2 or 3 stones of each color. Eddie looks at the rock shell, stating, this isn't very pretty inside. Not letting the subject go, Kathy replies, that's because the boogeyman lived inside the rock. Now there are 3 boogeymen unleashed in the world. Paula tells Kathy, stop it, girl. There is no such thing as the boogeyman. And you know it. Kathy reminds Paula, that's not what you said when you were in grade school. Brayden tells Paula, don't get into that argument with Hunter. He ain't gonna let you win that one. He's seen the boogeyman. Wendy comments, yeah. And his name is Chucky. Brayden then asks, that reminds me. Does anybody got any good ideas how to get rid of the Chucky? Eddie replies, I told you, bro. Burn his house down. Brayden laughs and replies, you know I can't do that. Anybody else got any ideas? Kathy laughs and suggests to Brayden, you can get rid of him the same way I got rid of Paul Mahoney. Brayden asks, how did you guys do that, again? Kathy explains, one day, after school, me and Eddie went back in time to the morning. We met our counterparts at my house before school. Then, 2 of me and 2 of Eddie went to Paul Mahoney's house. When he came out of his house to get in his car, me and my counterpart approached him from both sides, yelling out to him, we are Katerina Karakova. Mahoney went into a major league panic and ran back inside. He ended in a sanitarium after that. Wanting to get rid of Chucky in any way possible, Wendy exclaims, that sounds perfect. Let's set a date. Liking the idea, Mark suggests, how about Saturday, July 20th? We'll all be at the new track, laying sod. Paula exclaims, that would be the perfect alibi. Brayden asks, what do we do? How do we do this? Kathy explains, we go into the future to the date Saturday, July 20th. Then, we meet ourselves and go pay the little Chucky a visit. Paula points out, but we'll all be at the track. Kathy replies, so, then we just travel to Saturday, July 20th on multiple days, and there can be 2, 3, or 4 of us. Kathy thinks for a moment and mentions, we'll have to go to the past and tell our counterparts to do this. Paula asks, why? Kathy explains, because if we go to the future to Saturday, July 20th, like right now, we couldn't do it a second time without coming back. Traveling to the past isn't subject to those rules. Paula agrees, saying, that makes a lot of sense. Brayden, who is not quite as familiar with the use of the portal, replies, I'm glad it makes sense to you guys. It don't make no sense to me. Kathy assures Brayden, don't worry. We'll take care of it. Paula asks Kathy, so, what's the plan? Kathy explains, we'll just go to the past and tell our counterparts to go to the future on three separate occasions, all to the date Saturday, July 20th, at exactly 11 o'clock in the morning. And we'll meet in Brayden's front yard, behind that big bush. Then, we'll walk across the street to the Chucky's house and knock on his door. And there'll be three of each of us in the Chucky's front yard. Then, we can mess with his head. That should scare the shit out of him. And if he calls the police, on July 20th, we will all be at the high school laying sod. Paula tells Kathy, you, me, Mark, and Eddie can do that. Brayden asks, do you think that we'll get rid of him? Eddie replies, it's worth a shot. Everyone agrees that it is a great plan, so the date for the great takedown of Chucky is set for 11 a.m. on July 20th. The evening winds down, with everyone now having two perfectly cut stones of each color. Mark and Paula carry Mark Jr. and Dawn, who are still asleep, out to the car. As Brayden carries Hunter out to the car, Hunter wakes up and asks, can I go in the pool? Brayden tells Hunter, you can go in the pool tomorrow. It's past your bedtime. Hunter replies, so. Brayden tells Hunter, it's past my bedtime and mommy's bedtime, too. So, there ain't nobody to watch you in the pool. Hunter falls back asleep and will definitely not forget that his father told him that he can go in the pool tomorrow. When Brayden gets home, he decides to check his pool chemistry and clean the skimmers before he goes to bed, thus having one less chore to do tomorrow morning. Going out into his backyard, Brayden sees that someone is in his pool. Brayden yells out, hey! Get your two asses out of my pool. One of the uninvited swimmers whispers to the other, shit! We're in trouble now. Brayden yells back to them, that's right. Both of your asses are in trouble now. Now, get your asses out of my pool. Both trespassers move slowly toward the ladder, knowing that what is coming will not be fun. Seeing Chuck is struggling to get out of the pool, Brayden grabs Chuck's arm, giving it a strong pull. Chuck screams out, ow. You're hurting me. Brayden exclaims, I ain't even begun to hurt you, Junior. Your ass ain't seen nothing yet. Brayden tells Haynes, I'll be back for your ass in a minute. Brayden drags Chucky to the gate and out to the road. Chucky screams out, let me go. Brayden boldly tells Chucky, shut your ass, Junior. You're gonna wake everyone up. Giving Chucky a simultaneous kick behind his knee and a brisk shove to his back, Brayden thrusts Chucky onto the road. Chucky lands on his face and cries out in pain. Brayden goes back for Terry Haynes, finding that she is already coming out of the gate and running away. Brayden lets her go, not wanting to be bothered with chasing her down. Brayden locks the gate and goes inside. Chucky and Haynes run across the street to Chucky's house, knowing better than to call the police. Should Chucky call the police, the officer taking the call will not likely believe any part of Chucky's story. And besides, with all the illegal drugs likely to be found in Chucky's house, he does not want to risk getting arrested. Over the past few years, Eddie has been busy expanding his real estate holdings. Next to Eddie's service station sits an old house that was formerly used as a photography studio. The photography business has closed, and the owner, Emily, has retired and moved away. The building immediately came up for either sale or lease, catching Eddie's attention. Eddie, recalling from a trip to the past through the portal, remembers that, at some time in the future, the location of the photography studio will be the future location of Eddie's tire and power cell. Sitting on 3 acres with 400 feet of road frontage, the property is a prime piece of real estate. Moving on the deal the first day the property is on the market, Eddie contacts Davies and Rice, LLP, informing them that he wants to buy the building. Mr. Rice draws up the contract and presents it to the seller on Eddie's behalf. The seller accepts Eddie's offer, and the property is transferred to Eddie. The seller, who is getting up there in years, had retired years ago and was glad to unload the property. Not yet knowing the specifications for building a tire and power cell facility, Eddie decides to not move ahead with any building construction at the current time. Not immediately knowing what to do with the property, Eddie hires Mark to completely renovate the old, but very well-built, home. After all, Eddie Jr. has at least 15 years before he enters the working world. Eddie figures he'll put the building up for lease until it's time to move forward with the power cell and tire facility. Eddie's goal is merely to get the place leased out to pay for the expenses over the next few years. Mark arrives at the project, asking Eddie, "What are we doing with this place?" Remembering the large parking lot at Eddie's tire and power cell, Eddie replies, "The first thing I want to do is put in a parking lot." Mark asks, "Where?" Eddie replies, "On the right side of the property. Make the parking lot 8 inches of steel-reinforced concrete, and use lots of rebar. And put in lighting like we did at Dr. Akinmola's church." Mark asks, "How many parking spaces?" Eddie replies, 100 sounds about right. "But make the parking places 12 feet wide because it will eventually be an auto repair facility, and I don't want any doors to get dinged. And put in a few parking places for trucks." Mark replies, "Got it." Mark asks, "What else?" Eddie explains, "The brick is in great shape, but the windows are not, so replace all the windows. The floors need some work, so sand and refinish the hardwoods. And paint the walls and ceilings. All 3 restrooms need new fixtures. All the lighting fixtures, inside and out, need to be replaced. And there's a darkroom in the house. Just leave the darkroom, as it is until I get someone in there." Mark asks, "So, you want the place looking brand new?" Eddie thinks for a moment and replies, "Yeah. That's it, bro. Make the place look brand new." Mark laughs and asks Eddie, "Why didn't you just say so?" Eddie laughs and replies, "Well, I did. I just used a lot more words than you did." Eddie and Mark take a look around the building, inside and out, making sure they've not forgotten anything. Mark suggests building an 8-foot-high wall around the property, similar to the one behind Eddie's service station. Eddie agrees, knowing that a wall will provide additional security for Eddie's tire and power cell in the future. Mark makes a few notes, then heads home to line up the contractors to do the work. A few days before Saturday, July 20th, Eddie is at the service station working on customizing a golf cart for the high school. Adding a lift kit, larger knobby tires, a trailer hitch, a wide-view rearview mirror, and two-way radio are among the list of enhancements. Best of all, Eddie upgraded the drivetrain to a 72-volt motor, increasing both the torque and top speed. Once Eddie is finished with his customization, Vinny will give the golf cart a new paint job. The golf cart, however, is not for the golf team. Dr. Zunde would tell the golfers to run between strokes and carry their own clubs, thus getting some real exercise on the golf course. The electric-powered golf cart will replace the Cushman vehicle that the track team has been using to retrieve the field implements from the red zone. With 2 golf carts in progress, Eddie has his work cut out for him, planning to have at least one of them completed before the dedication of the new track. Bobby B. walks over, asking Eddie, "Are the golf carts still on schedule?" Eddie replies, "Yes. But it's going to be tight. I'm going to get one over to Vinny today so he can start the paint job. This way, I'll have at least one ready for the dedication." Bobby B. asks Eddie, "Why does Johnson need 2 golf carts?" Eddie explains, "One is for retrieving the field implements from the red zone. Johnson is going to use the other one to transport runners from the school to the track during the home meets." Bobby B. smiles and asks, "What? Are they too lazy to walk?" Eddie laughs and replies, "No. During really hot days, he wants to keep the runners inside, in the air conditioning. That will give them a slight competitive edge when their event is called. Bobby B suggests the other teams aren't going to think that's very fair. Eddie replies, the other teams can sit in the school, too, if they wanted to. Or, they can hire an air-conditioned bus to take them to the meets, and hang out in the bus until their event comes up. Bobby B asks, if the runners stay inside the school, is that against the rules? Eddie replies, no. Johnson already ran that by Kathy's father. It turns out that there is no rule either allowing or disallowing it. So, it's fair game. Bobby B asks, it looks like it's almost finished. What's left to do? Eddie explains, since the golf cart has way more power than the factory version, it bucks a little when you first take off. So, I machined an anti-tramp bar to prevent bucking. That should take care of it. I'm about to put those in now. Then, I'm taking it over to Vinny's so he can start the paint job. Bobby B intelligently asks, couldn't you just put in stiffer leaf springs? Eddie replies, I already did, because it's now carrying 6 12-volt batteries. If the springs were any stiffer, the ride would be way too harsh. By mid-afternoon, Eddie has the first golf cart completed and gives it a test drive, pushing it to its limit. Having the bucking problem solved, Eddie drives the first unit across the street to Vinny's body shop, where Vinny will begin the custom paint job. Eddie then continues the work he started on the second golf cart, hoping to get it finished before the dedication.